us from an apocalypse that exists only in his own scheming head, Trump has misused our nation's army, autocratically suspended America's asylum laws, allowed border agents to tear gas migrant mothers and children, separated thousands of the children from their parents, cruelly incarcerated toddlers in lockdown tent camps, created chaos in our immigration court system, and vaingloriously proclaimed that we taxpayers fork over $5 billion to start building a ludicrous Great Wall of Trump in his honor. Aside from the fact that there is no crisis of asylum seekers overrunning our borders, is there anything that a real president might do about the increased flow of families desperately fleeing Central America? Yes. For example, instead of mindlessly sending troops to the border, the real need is to move in a battalion of extra immigration judges and customs officers to quickly adjudicate the swelling backlog of asylum cases. Also, greatly expand U.S. support for international refugee programs in Central America and Mexico so asylum claims can be processed without mass migrations to the U.S. And stop condoning the vicious forces pushing people to flee Central America, from police repression to the predatory practices of our own corporations. This is Jim Hightower saying, but that would require a competent leader in the White House, not a peevish president who stamps his tiny feet and throws a Trump tantrum in a pathetic attempt to get his way.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
On today's program, our guest is Monta Welch. She joins host Richard Mabian to discuss her lifelong advocacy, starting in earnest just over 10 years ago, focusing on health, environment, and climate concerns. She founded a number of unique organizations working with others in all levels of government. But first, the environmental news for the week of 12/24/18 on Eco Radio KC. My name is Teresa Wilkie. USA Today reports the world's burgeoning plastic waste crisis has won the attention of Britain's Royal Statistical Society, which shows 90.5%, the proportion of plastic waste that has never been recycled, as its international statistic of the year. The Society chooses a winner from nominations made by the public. Democracy Now! Reports Washington, D.C. city lawmakers voted unanimously on a clean energy bill mandating 100% renewable electricity by 2032. The legislation also requires public transportation and fleet vehicles achieve zero carbon emissions by 2045. The mandate would apply to government buildings in the Capitol, including the White House. North American Wind Power reports, months after the previous farm bill expired, Congress passed an $867 billion 2018 farm bill. And there are some very interesting provisions in it. The legislation keeps intact the $50 million Rural Energy for America program, REAP, to fund on-farm and rural small business renewable energy systems and energy conservation improvements. It includes a provision that removes industrial hemp from the Controlled Substance Act, making the non-psychoactive version of cannabis legal to grow in all 50 states. The bill expands funding for the Food Insecurity Nutrition Incentives Program, which helps low-income shoppers purchase fresh local produce. It maintains the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, formerly known as food stamps, without new punitive work requirements. Greenability reports you may recycle any used Christmas lights at Southeast Enterprises, 6701 Booth Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri, located on 67th Street between Blue Ridge Cutoff and James A. Reed Road, just off Missouri 350 Highway. Their hours are Monday through Friday from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Email info@southeastenterprises.org. www.hightowerlowdown.org. You can also drop your lights off in Cotton's Hardware and Rental, 1832 Mass Street, Lawrence, Kansas, and they will take them to Southeast Enterprises for you. Now we go to Richard and his guest.
Terry, this is Richard Mabia, and welcome everyone. They've put out a big Merry Christmas to you all, and since I won't be back on before the end of the year, I'll also add my Happy New Year's wish to you, too. It's quite a thrill being here. We are engaged in working out the electronic systems. You know, this day and age, you know, electronics is a way of life. And I don't know if I've ever been to anything where electronics was being used and it went right. So y'all bear with us here a few minutes. We have a different engineer on, and he's working on getting this set so that we can get the person. She's calling in from Columbia, Missouri. You heard Terry saying giving you a little information about her. I think that she is probably one of those outstanding persons that, you know, it's hard to put a classification on what they are. It's kind of like when people ask me to introduce myself, and I find myself lost. I mean, there's so many different ways that I could introduce myself, and you're going to end up leaving something out. But she's one of those kind of persons. Like Terry was saying, she's been involved in the environmental conservation world for the last 10 years, which is why I have her on here. You know, those of you who have been listening to my shows this year know that I have been focusing in on the fact that this is 2018, and the environmental movement as we know it in America really got its public kickoff in 2008. That was Obama coming in office, the whole bit. So what I've been doing is bringing on stalwart individuals, ones that have been engaged in this movement, this concept, this way of thinking since the beginning, even though most of them were involved before 2008. But I've just been using the 10 years, a decade of effort to see if, in fact, what have we been able to accomplish. And so, is she on?
Hello?
Yes, you're there. Well, it worked out. You heard me making my excuses about the technology. Hello, Monta. It's very, very nice to have you on this show. So first of all, say hello to the folks, Monta.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for being on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
Special program.
Yes, yeah, a tough time to be here, but I'm glad that I hope the people are listening in, and I'm glad to have you here. For those out there listening, I met Monta about 10 years ago, or somewhere around in there. The only time that I remember the state putting on that really was regional. It was Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas. They came in from up in Iowa,
right,
and they held this Occupy Coke Town in Wichita. And we were down there for a weekend, and we were talking about the Coke industry and the whole bit. And they asked me to come down for my usual reason to speak about race and the occupied movement. Now, I'm not going into that on this conversation because it was a concern that the occupied movement was missing race. There was some concerns about that, and I addressed that issue. That's what I was there. But that's where I got a chance to meet Monta. In fact, she was one of the honchos while we were down there, which made me know she was somebody. And since then, we've always had that social networking connection, whether we talked or not, or I just kept up with what I would see on the internet. So when I saw that, when I was doing this, and we had a concern here in Kansas City about not having enough people from Missouri on the air. It seemed like all our hosts are from Kansas, and we do a lot of stuff about what's going on in Kansas, but we don't get a lot on there about what's happening in Missouri, and I thought she would be ideal for that. I want to continue where Terry left off in her opening introduction of you, Monta. She says on here she has founded a number of unique organizations, learned how to work with others, all that's important, at all levels of government, successfully supporting and changing local dynamics, shepherding successful state ballot initiative, building coalitions. Her work continues to bear fruit today, locally, statewide, nationally, witnessing the depth of our problem with elections over two and a half years ago with the 2016 primary election. She began investigating, researching, writing sweeping, comprehensive 50-state solutions out of the online working group, Take Back Election, in a collective effort to establish fair, transparent, verifiable, secure, unified 50-state reform as a Constitution amendment. And it said she hasn't stopped. You know, that is quite a bio.
Yes, there's a lot. But I just feel that I've been trying to do all I can in all these different areas, because really there's so much need across the board. I mostly did start out in kind of an environmental sense way, but on the other hand, I think there are, like you said, you know, race and, you know, flora and fauna, the animals, all of us, you know, we're all here on the planet, and we have to figure out ways to get along with each other. And some of the organizations, well, really it's been a focus of all the organizations I've started, is to bring lots of people together. And I've really tried, actually, to get people from different perspectives, too, because so often we just simply kind of paint, quote, the other side
right
with a whole broad brush and just sort of tune out, turn our ears off. And I had a very interesting experience that I think was a very good learning experience. Actually, I've had a number of these, but one in particular was with one of the organizations I started called People's Visioning. That we have a Facebook group for that, and we have a Facebook group for the organization Take Back Elections that you were commenting on as
right.
well.
Right.
Take Back Elections.
Okay, but before you go into that, let's talk about Manta.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I want folks to know who you are. Are you from? Is Columbia your place of birth?
It's not my place of birth, but I have lived here in Columbia and Missouri, a little bit in St. Louis for since my 30s, and I'm in my mid 60s.
Okay.
So,
luckily,
half my life I've lived here, and it's I'm got some pretty deep roots here. My children were born here. I have.
Okay, it seems like you're breaking up. Is she breaking up, or is that just my ear? You're breaking up a little bit, Monta. I just want you
okay.
to be aware of that.
Is this better?
Yeah, that's much better. That's
okay,
much better.
Perfect.
Okay, now look. Okay, so you're in Missouri. You're in Columbia. Okay.
Yes.
And how? What got you involved in the environmental world?
Well, actually, I was always involved in it since I was young.
Okay.
But I sort of put it on hold while I was raising children as a single mom. So, you know, I was pretty busy and trying to focus on that.
Right.
And then when they got a little older, they were still in the house, but a little older, I started kind of getting back into just staying a little more informed with the environment. And I kind of became a little bit concerned with the sort of unfolding of discussion around climate change. So that's kind of one of the things that got me back into the environmental work that I had actually been in before.
Okay, so you're definitely a climate change person.
Well, an environmental person overall.
Okay.
Because I believe with climate change, while we all see that that is happening, I think that it's wise for us to try to build bridges to understand it more. And I want to talk about something, you know, tonight that is something I've become a little more aware of that complicates what we're seeing about and understanding about climate change, in my view. But yes, I you know, it is clear that things are changing. At the same time, I do think that there are points that are made that aren't always coming from the climate change camp, generally speaking, that can be found to be valid. And
okay.
So I think we need to make sure that we're really open to all the possibilities. And one of the things I did want to talk about, whenever you're ready for me to go there, is about, you know, that situation.
Okay. Hold off on it.
Okay.
Because I want that.
You tell
to be,
me when you're ready.
Yeah,
for me
because
to get
I
off
want
myself here.
Yeah, I want that to be where do we go from here? All right. So
okay.
now we got you involved. You can you remember your initial coming out as far as people recognizing and seeing you as being a go-to person for environmental whatever concerns,
yeah,
issues?
Yeah, that does surround, because I sort of had this sort of big break from when I was younger and doing, you know, environmental things.
Okay.
But more, you know, getting where people would sort of recognize me in context with this issue. After I started kind of getting back informed with, you know, the environmental things going on, I really had this concern about climate change. I looked around to see who was doing anything on it that I could join in with locally. And while some people did kind of mention it and were talking about renewables and whatever, they really weren't very focused on it with the intensity that I felt like it needed. So it was right before I was doing different things, trying to talk to the schools, to the local radio, these other organizations, whatever, and really wasn't getting very far in my view. And so then Al Gore came out with his film. I had a showing that I actually put on myself. Essentially, I did work with a couple of other people,
okay,
to put together, you know, the location and some people to have booths and tables of information there otherwise. And we had people coming from all over, even from, like, you know, school buses full of young people from Fulton and different small towns around. We filled up the theater that we had here and had a good discussion afterwards. So that was, I guess you would say, the coming out.
That was the one, yeah. And I think that was, for many folks, the issue that brought them to the table. What was the Undisputed Truth? Is that what that's the name of the movie?
Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, that was a starting point for many folks. David Corton was my starting point. His book, The Great Turning, and it came from his comment about the leadership for the world to come will come from the people who have suffered the most injustices. And when he said that, I knew exactly who he was talking about. Not necessarily a black, but the low-income community, because they've had to deal with the powers to be. You know, and that's one thing that's really important. And I'm sure when you get to that point that you want to talk about, that's going to be some place where I can chime in with you, because what people in the middle class portion of the country are starting to face when they're dealing with their environmental and conservation concerns is kind of what the people in the low-income communities have been discovering, have been dealing with pretty much all of their lives.
Yes, for a long
time.
Relate as
right.
a single mother.
Yes, well, that's what I'm hoping that when
but
we get to
you.
That point you want to talk about, because when you talk about, like, what happened with the Paris Agreement,
right.
You know, what happened with when the different stuff that Obama did when he was in, and to have people so committed to it that this is the way it's supposed to be, this is the way it's going to be, and then to realize that on a given moment it can be completely changed and changed in such a way there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, even when it's coming down to the Obamacare. See, those are the things that David Corton had the wisdom to know were going to become factors in this country, on this planet. And what we're seeing is that the ruling class if I can use that for lack of a better term, is in the position that they're making decisions, and regardless of how people in the field feel about it, it don't matter. Okay, so we get back to that. I don't want to go there. I want to keep us on on this path we're going on. So now you did the Al Gore movie, and so I think it's remarkable because I know out there in the middle of the country, in mid-mo, there's just not a whole lot of organizations and groups that you're hearing about, okay? So for you to be able to do that movie and show that screening and have people come in, I think was fantastic. Also, I'm going to put this number out here, y'all. We're going to try it. We don't know if we're going to be able to pull it off or not. But if anyone out there would want to call in to address anything that we're talking about or even to ask Monta a question, I want you to feel free to do so. And the number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Just give a call in, you know, and we're not trying to get into no elongated conversation, but you may want to ask her a question. Because, see, Monta, one thing that I'm trying to do is make the public that's listening audience understand those of us that are out here that are doing the kind of stuff that you do and I do and others like us do are not some mystical person that has come up out of some scientific arena. These are just regular people that says enough is enough. Somebody's got to do something about it. So I'm glad to hear you say that's kind of how you got there. Yes, we've all been concerned about the environment. I'm glad to see that. So now, it says on here you started various type organizations and group. Can you name some of those?
Yes. sort of out of that one event, I started Columbia Climate Change Coalition.
Okay.
And shortly after we were going, I knew that we needed to get more people and build something larger. And I realized that the best way to do that would be to reach out to the different faith communities. So I began a group called Interfaith Care for Creation. And we've done a lot of things in each of these groups, some of the accomplishments and things that I could maybe touch on if you want. But then after those two groups got going, I believe it was after both of those were going that I met you, and the Occupy movement happened, and it was actually, you know, the idea that I had that actually pulled all the people together to have the Occupy Coketown to raise awareness and educate on all these different things, but certainly, you know, the pollution,
right,
and slash, you know, however people want to look at that, because I'll just stick on to the organizations. After I met you, I came home and started the People's Visioning Group to, again, bring more people in of a different sort of nature here in our community, and to really come up with just this little old grassroots, you know, vision. What do we want, you know, for the future? And it covers all the different things, not just the environment, but obviously the environment is a big part of it, because most of the people that you're mentioning, you know, that you said on the kind of lower end of the spectrum, most of us, well, maybe not all of us, maybe not people in the cities so much, but a lot of us, even still, even in the cities, do have a connection to the environment,
yeah. Yes.
Aspect of things.
Right. Yeah,
so
I agree with
it's
that.
It's heavily in there, but it covers everything that you would want to see in a beautiful new world, so to speak.
Well, I've seen this people visioning word being used. So you're saying you're like one of the folks that started. Is that a nationally state-based organization, or is that?
Well, People's Visioning was started here in Columbia.
Okay.
I really haven't seen it anywhere else.
Okay.
But I have, I do know we've had students here that have gone on to other locales that worked with us when they were here. They haven't started a People's Visioning elsewhere, but it is a way to, we have had a couple of pods of people here in Missouri, the Springfield area and the Hannibal area, that have people that have maybe a loose people's visioning going, or we tried to get that up and going and were sort of derailed by it with the 2016 elections and getting it going in more places.
Okay, now,
because
now,
that changed a lot of things.
Now, does the your people visioning group, does it also do with the fair wage campaign too?
We have not gotten onto a specific sort of legislation for that. So the answer is just, you know, the stark answer is no. On the other hand, part of the challenge in deciding where we want to focus is we think that we interact with government sometimes, but we also think that we do a lot of things ourselves to just sort of, like they have the phrase that says government follows where the people lead, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so obviously some of that can certainly be interacting with government, like I have in the past with the Renewable Energy Standard for the state of Missouri. I was one of the people that actually, at the last minute, because of my earlier work, was able to save the day and tell people in other cities where to go and how to get the final signatures we needed with connections that I had put in place, you know, just prior to that.
Okay, now, see, the reason I asked that is that, you know, that that group that they have that pastor out of North Carolina, NAACP,
yes, uh-huh.
Doesn't it have something about people associated with its title, too?
They don't have the same title, but they do a lot of some similar kinds of things, I would say.
Yeah.
I think that they do seem to, I don't know everything about them,
right,
but my
right.
impression is that they seem to try to focus on, yes, like government interaction more.
Well, I know that,
like organizing people to
yeah.
get government change that way.
I know that the Kansas Power and Light, how do you say that, the group over in the one that
Monty? Yes, Monty, that's right,
the
Kansas Monty City group? Power and Light.
Not the utility company, the social organization, one that Monty.
Yes, the religious group,
yeah.
Interfaith
Power and Light, or having a people, whatever that is, thing up in Topeka on the 15th, January mm-hmm. the 15th. I'm planning on being there. In fact, I told them that I wanted to get a table because I have two roles. One is the president of the Kansas City, Kansas NAACP, and the other is with the Kansas Sierra Club. And I told them that I wanted to have my table placed right next to the Kansas Sierra Club, because I haven't been, and I want to go to find out what it's about. What is it that they're really pushing and trying to do?
Yes, I did call them early on when I was Columbia Climate Change Coalition without the interfaith group I started.
Right.
And I think they're a little different now and a little more open, but at that time they weren't really working with secular community,
right.
non-faith community groups,
right.
but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, they opened up
point.
A little bit now. They have Monty Reed here. He's in there, the rabbi, and
mm-hmm,
he spends
yes.
a lot of time engaged in what's going on. You know, we're going to take our break now. We'll be back in a minute. Again, for you out there listening, if in fact you want to join the conversation, that number to call is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. We'll be right back.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. You don't have to quit your day job to make a difference on climate change.
No matter if you're in healthcare, media, journalism, science and tech, you can integrate sustainability, you can pursue it, and you can have both purpose and profit.
Marilyn Wade is the author of Sustainability at Work, Careers That Make a Difference. She says anyone can integrate their concerns about climate into their jobs. For example, if you're a teacher,
Your role is to prepare these students for their future lives and careers. Of course, you can specialize within that. You can focus on environmental science, but you can also integrate it throughout your educational curriculum, no matter what the subject matter is.
Or let's say you're in finance. Natural disasters, resource shortages, and other climate change impacts can threaten investments. So Waite says it's essential to understand and weigh those risks. Office employees can encourage their companies to buy environmentally friendly products. Nurses can educate patients about climate-related health risks. The list goes on. The bottom line is that regardless of your job, addressing climate change is all in a day's work. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Tell your smart speaker, play KKFI, and enjoy the programming you love. KKFI can be wherever you are.
You never know what you're going to hear on Radioactive Magazine. We might be discussing racism or climate change or Palestinian rights or a dozen other social justice issues, featuring interviews by activists from ACLU, Indivisible KC, Black Lives Matter, many more. Whatever the topic, we promise a thought-provoking discussion. That's Radioactive Magazine's Tuesday, 6 to 6:30 p.m., right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And we're back.
All right. This is Richard Mabian, and I'm talking to Monta Welch, who is in Columbia, Missouri. And Monta, you were, I think that what we want to be able to do now is to bring in that part that you want to talk about. Let's use the, I want to have plenty of time for us to be able to have that discussion. I think we're going to find that that's probably, we're probably on the same page. So you take it from here, and it will, and I'll just jump in there when I need to jump in.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of just mention a few overall things, and the reason I'm going to point these out is because I want people to know that there's a lot that individuals can do, even if you are alone or if you, you know, just grab a group or a handful of people, even, you know, family or neighbors. You can do a lot of things, and I want to just touch on a couple little things. I know that folks listening remember the work to save our water, and so I headed up a resolution supporting human rights, clean energy, and clean water over here in Columbia, and I believe there was such a thing in Kansas City as well. And then also the renewable energy standard, you know, people can work for these different things. We also put an annual community-wide observance of Earth Hour as an educational opportunity for the whole community in place that's ongoing and adopted by the city here. Also, we did a project called Net Zero Energy House that we did by putting together, again, more collaborations, this time with Habitat for Humanity as well as the City of Columbia. And that was really a great project. It was, at that time, and maybe still, the only new build net zero energy, affordable, sustainable, renewable, all of the accessible, all of that type of thing, family-sized home. And so it's kind of a benchmark for everyone. We just wanted to show what was possible. So we did that for our community. And it spawned, it was kind of like all the rage with Habitat for Humanity. They different, you know, they have organizations all over, and it kind of spawned a lot of other things going on in Habitat for Humanity with some net zero projects elsewhere. We've also done organic community garden projects, and I know you're familiar with, you know, doing garden projects.
Right.
Ours have always been focused on, you know, being organic, doing it the organic way so that people could learn about how to do it that way as well as learn how to grow, you know, period. So we've done educational projects at our farmers market, which is kind of a regional market here, or, you know, at least, you know, certainly larger than Columbia anyway. And so we've done a lot of those kinds of things as a group, and various different groups, like our Interfaith Care for Creation has a sustaining, ongoing garden project, and then People's Visioning did a separate educational project at the farmers market. So we've had all the different groups doing different things, but also working together, too.
Mm-hmm.
But how you opened this part of the call, I just wanted to say that I think the place that we find ourselves working more together with other people is really important, even people that don't agree with you, people that think differently than you, because oftentimes they do have views that points of view that are valid. And I think it's important for us to realize that we have to learn how to work with other people who think differently than us, because we have a lot of different people on the planet. And, you know, if we're evenly divided, or, you know, whatever we are, even if it's, you know, more or less, we still need to care for others and in loving ways communicate, you know, our reasons and be open to their reasons as we would want them to be open to ours. And so I think when we do that, we can create more positive things. We had an incident at one of our meetings where people had heard we were going to be talking about this net zero energy project. And people who thought that this was, you know, maybe something that they didn't agree with showed up, and People's Visioning is not something that we would ever say that other people couldn't be a part of, even though it might sort of turn a certain way most of the time. So we advertise our meetings because it really is public. And to this particular meeting, some folks who weren't part of our normal group showed up with kind of some questions for us. And we had a really good discussion that ended up with all of us feeling a lot better about each other at the end than in the beginning, and understanding more about each other. And that's how we could feel better about each other. I think in the climate we're in right now, this kind of thing is very important. I want to kind of mention one good thing, too, and then go into something I think is really important for people to be aware of. Because really, you know, sometimes when we're talking about the climate change part of things, and maybe before I go into it, I'll kind of mention that's why I sometimes talk about pollution versus climate change. And if you have people who might not necessarily believe in climate change, they are mostly do believe that we have, you know, pollution that needs to be dealt with and taken care of. And it's pretty easy to kind of see that it's not such a gigantic, you know, thing without a control that you have to decide, okay, I'm all in on the science or whatever. You can just simply agree that you want to work towards reducing pollution, and everyone can be a lot more on the same page and be more ready to work with each other. So finding some common ground areas is, I think, really important. And also, you know, a lot of people in climate change, we feel like, okay, well, we're already too high, or, you know, what kind of time do we have, and blah, 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 you know. So I think sometimes that can be depressing for people, so I wanted to tell people about something I've recently seen that's going to be coming out, is magnetic energy. I read about it in an article about using it in refrigeration, using it with the, you know, small engines, motors in our refrigerators.
Okay, explain it. Explain magnetic energy.
I'm not a scientist.
Okay, all right. I got you.
I know that they have different kind of steps or levels that they use the magnetic pulled energy to produce actually an energy that doesn't need, you know, the fossil fuels, essentially. And there's an article, I did post it
I'll have to try to post it on my timeline and find it so that if folks want to visit me on Facebook, they can find me, MONTAWELCH, and I have a, you know, beautiful mountain scene, so they'll know it's me.
Okay.
They could probably, you know,
I'll have to hear that again before we go off there.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll try to post the article I read, though, so that people can read it there and understand it better, because I'm not sure that I'm qualified to explain it all.
I got you covered there, but I'm telling people that you've given us a title, Magnetic Energy, right?
It's coming. Yes, it's going to be coming.
Okay, so what I'm going to do...
I think it'll be having lots of applications.
Okay.
I think that there are new technologies coming.
Okay, well, I agree with you on that. But what I'm going to do is tell the folks that's listening, Magnetic Energy, to take the time to look it up.
Research.
To take the time to look it up, to get a definition of their own, and I will do the same. And if, in fact, I find someone who can come on to talk about it in such
a way that
it can be beneficial to the people who listen, I'll find that person and bring them on. You know, I want to go back to your points that you were talking about. In fact, I'm sitting here with Dave Bennett. He's the one that's doing our engineering for us.
Hi, Devonta.
And Dave is a science teacher at one of our local public high schools. He and I and River Keepers and other folks, we do a lot with teaching kids how to scientifically test water. So Dave is involved in working with people. Dave, bring up your concern that you had about the working with people thing.
I'm thinking of specific examples that I would love to hear in terms of, let's say I come in as a person who's got a question for you when you're presenting or when you're wanting to help people understand about climate change, and we'll do a little role play, like I'm a student or a young person, because I deal with students on a daily basis, and they would say something along the lines of, there's not enough people doing anything about this. So what is my, you know, what is the point of one person doing anything? So what would be a good response for that to help you get on common ground with that person?
I don't really, I would say that there are people who are examples of one person getting a lot accomplished, and I don't want to take entire credit, because I always want to thank everybody, but I am saying that there are examples of people that have gone and pulled other people in together. They've stepped up and done these things. Like when I said that we had student interns who, well, I didn't say they were interns, but students that were part of our People's Visioning, we had some interns, and at the end of it, they all got to say, at the end of their intern with us, they got to talk to us. And, you know, one of them said that they learned how to go about starting up, you know, an organization or getting people together. And I would just simply say that one person definitely can. It has to start pretty much usually with one person. Even if you just reach out, you have a light bulb moment, you have an idea you want to do something about, what do you do about it? You reach out to someone you think would get on board or help you move that down the road or find it interesting, or you kind of create, it's just like if you went out on the playground, you said, hey, I have a light bulb moment, let's play basketball, then you just gather up the people who want to play basketball. It's the same thing.
Someone had to start that game off. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, my concern in what you're saying about people working together and understanding that it's going to be necessary for us to develop dialogue with people who are different. It's going to really require people understanding what that means. Monta, I have a lot of problems with middle class way of thinking. I love it. I understand it. I live it. I'm a part of it. But at the same time, I represent a portion of the population that's not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's multiculturally that's not. And when you try to explain to those middle class thinking people who I love, I mean, these are some of my best friends, that their concept is not reaching or touching the mentality or the heart and soul of the people who I serve.
And you have to tell them those things in just the way you told me. That's why the communication part is so important and comes to play, because in a way, we had people in that meeting I mentioned that thought maybe we should try to, you know, stop the meeting and maybe just kick these people out of our meeting, you know?
Well, and
it's the communication. Like,
well,
you just gave a beautiful explanation that I think they could hear and understand.
I don't know. I'm telling you, I do that, and I'll get comments from really good people, stuff like, so what are you saying? Everything we've been doing is wrong? I mean, it's real frustrating because they don't see it. I'll tell them that I think that, you know, the worst thing that I have problem with when people come to the meeting telling me what they think is a solution for a low-income community, and they're not even dealing with the mentality of the low-income community. And I'm not talking about academically, because I have some very sharp academic people, but the driving, the hot buttons that exist within people who live in the inner city, it's totally different than the hot buttons of the people who live in just middle class inner city.
I totally hear what you're saying. There are different concerns, different priorities, different in-your-face living situations, and the two don't understand each other. We've tried to do community meetings that would sort of help address some of that. Plus, you know, I think they're successful to a degree. A lot more work needs to be done. But with the people's visioning, you can have people, and we did have people, that fit in kind of a different strata. I'm not going to say they all get along with each other, because sometimes it does winnow out some of the people who kind of just, you know, sort of have to see things their way and do things their way instead of being more open, like I've said a couple of times in the program, to listening to the other person and kind of getting something out of that might actually change their perception.
Well,
and that could go both ways a little bit.
Yes,
but I feel that there is a great need for it in the category of people you're representing and talking about.
Because, see, what happens is we live in a you got to have an answer mentality. And I'm pushing the lever and saying, and these are the words I use for lack of better words, we need to come to the table brain dead. You know, not don't come there talking about what you know. Come there and let's take the issue, like the conversation we having right now, and brainstorm it, because I truly believe the intellectual capacity to be able to figure this out exists in the people who are involved in what we're doing.
It does, and that's exactly the model for people's visioning.
Yes.
That's how we started. We got together. We broke up into different categories, and people would choose. They could be in as many as they wanted, but not obviously at the same time, but we had different meetings after the kickoff, and what that was the point of it. Brainstorm, you know, in your group with each other, you know, some solutions, and we actually have a whole ideas bank that have come from people across the strata, you know, we need to kind of continue with that, but that's essentially the model of people's visioning.
Well, that's exactly what I see as being the problem. I knew this was going to happen when we got to this topic. I knew it was going to use up all our time, but we're down to about, we got about 2 minutes left here. This is fantastic. I want you, Monta, to become a regular. Most of the people who I interview, they are regulars. I have them come on from time to time just to give everybody an update of what's going on in their life, what's happening, what they feel we should know about. I looked at your postings this today, and you had one on there about the Trump signing the hemp bill nationally.
I wanted to talk about that. We don't have time.
I saw that. You also had one on there about them using what was it, ducks instead of pesticide in Japan. I thought that was a fabulous article. I had both of those written down. So your website is really good. Well, give people that number, how they can be able to connect with you on those things you send out. What do they need? Where do they need to go?
Well, it's probably best if they would like to join the Facebook group People's Visioning, or if they're interested in the election work, Take Back Elections.
Okay.
Those have Facebook groups. TakeBackElections.org has a website, and people can support us there, too, because obviously that's, you know, everybody needs kind of some sort of support, even including, you know,
right,
financial or whatever. But
right.
That's a place to get in touch. Also, my Facebook page, too, they could friend me if they just find me on Facebook.
Spell out your name. Spell out your
page.
Name. Spell out your name for them, because that's where you are on me. It's your Facebook page.
Yes, it's M-O-N-T-A, like the state of Montana, only shorter, Monta. Welch, like the grape juice people, W-E-L-C-H, so I tell people you can remember it, a vineyard in Montana.
Okay. All right, well, we're running out of time. I really, truly appreciate you coming on and having this with us.
I hope to be able to talk to your listeners about a couple of other things. Geoengineering, I was hoping to get to both of those things.
All right, well, we'll have you back now that we know we can do this. And I'm looking forward to being able to do it. So thank you for calling us, and I will be in touch, okay?
That sounds awesome, and Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry
and
Christmas.
Thank you to Dave and all of you over there at the station.
All right, thank
and
you.
And all the listeners.
All right,
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Calendar of events for the week of 12/24. This year, the Christmas bird count began December 14th and ends January 5th, 2019. There are organizers for the Christmas bird counts in Northwest Missouri and Northeast Kansas. See greenabilitymagazine.org for the list. Post-holiday recycling volunteers are needed Saturday, December 29th. Shifts vary at Red Bridge Recycling Center. Volunteer outside. This is a great opportunity for students on holiday break. Volunteers assist the recycling center site manager with various duties, such as breaking down cardboard, assisting patrons, etc. Shifts are 9:30 a.m. to 1 or 1 to 5 p.m. If these exact times do not work for you, they can be flexible. The Red Bridge Recycling Center is located at 5200 East Red Bridge Road, Kansas City, Missouri. Minimum age, 8 with parent, volunteer alone at 14 years. Call or text Amy Smith at 816-561-1062 or email volunteer@bridgingthegap.org and mention your preferred shift. These items and more can be viewed on the Eco Radio KC Facebook page and at the kkfi.org Eco Radio KC program page.
KKFI is volunteer-powered but relies on financial support from the community. You can share information about your organization or event with our supporters when you become a community marketing partner. Learn more at kkfi.org/marketing.
This is federal worker Kenneth Bate of the Social Security Administration, and I encourage all of my federal worker friends to support KKFI 90.1 FM during the combined federal campaign. Donating a few dollars each pay period can help keep community radio on the air in Kansas City. Designate your tax-deductible donation to KKFI CFC Agency Code 21994. Thank you for supporting community radio.
Dr. Seuss stops a gas pipeline. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The Paris Agreement on Climate Change was kept alive at the UN conference called COP24, which concluded Saturday in Poland.
Delegates from 200 countries produced a 156-page rulebook about how nations will report their progress to limit carbon emissions.
There was concern that the U.S. would weaken the agreement. However, the New York Times reports U.S. negotiators worked constructively behind the scenes relations with other countries, including China, on transparency rules.
Highly visible were the many young people in attendance. 15-year-old Greta Thunberg from Sweden admonished delegates, saying the planet was being exploited by the wealthy few.
Our biosphere is being sacrificed so that rich people in countries like mine can live in luxury. It is the sufferings of the many which pay for the luxuries of the few.
Investors agree that urgent action is needed. According to The Guardian, some of the world's biggest pension funds, insurers, and asset managers issued a stark warning that without cuts in carbon emissions and the phase-out of coal, the world faces a financial crash several times worse than that in 2008.
The Congress passed a massive farm bill last week with many environmental provisions, including increased funding for a program that prioritizes projects to protect drinking water and reduce harmful toxic algae blooms.
As Mother Jones reports, the bill also incentivizes farmers to use environmentally friendly soil management practices like reduced tillage, planting cover crops, and crop rotations in a way that sequester carbon.
Farmers will be able to get insurance when planting cover crops, which had in the past been problematic.
Another part of the bill allows farmers to grow hemp, taking it off the controlled substances list where it had been alongside drugs like heroin.
Early drafts of the bill included a rider that would have stopped local governments from regulating or restricting the use of pesticides in places like parks, playgrounds, and schools. But that provision was removed from the final legislation.
The organization Food and Water Watch applauded the bill, which makes important progress in organic food programs, including funding for research.
The bill is expected to be signed into law this coming week.
A growing consumer backlash against disposable plastics is driving a change in how water is bottled.
Department stores, zoos, and public facilities in the U.S. and Europe have stopped selling plastic water bottles, and a proposed bill in New York would ban the sale of them at parks, golf courses, and beaches.
Beverage companies are responding by attempting to develop a bottle made completely from recycled plastic, which has been a problem in the past due to discoloration and structural issues. Danone, the company that produces Evian, is betting on a new technology that can hopefully turn old plastics into new containers.
While Evian currently makes only 30% of its bottles from recycled plastic, it has pledged to make all of them from the materials by 2025.
One industry watcher told the Wall Street Journal that the importance of the matter has sunk in because of the broadened awareness of the environment, especially with millennials.
There's been an invasion of the U.S. by a new species of tick from Asia, and it has officials at the Centers for Disease Control worried about the spread of viruses and other pathogens.
The Asian longhorn tick is the first new variety of the arachnid to be found in the country in 80 years. As reported in Entomology Today, it's quickly moving across the eastern U.S. from Connecticut to Arkansas.
The critter thrives in areas of moderate temperature, humidity, and precipitation, which could include a large swath of the eastern U.S. as well as the coastal Pacific Northwest.
The newly detected species is very adaptable and can transmit disease, although to date it's not affected humans. The ticks can attack a cow or other livestock by the thousands and weaken them by depleting their blood supply. The female ticks reproduce without being fertilized, in effect producing clones.
Infections to humans from ticks in general are a big problem. The CDC reported in May that nearly 60,000 tick-borne infections were reported last year, but due to underreporting, they estimate the total number of actual cases may be as high as 300,000.
And finally, it's not often that you hear Dr. Seuss being quoted in federal court, but that's what happened last week when judges reprimanded the U.S. Forest Service for permitting a natural gas pipeline across two national forests and the Appalachian Trail.
Repeating the words of the small, fluffy Lorax who tried to save his beloved Trifula trees from a greedy industrialist, a three-judge appellate panel slammed the agency, saying, "We trust the United States Forest Service to speak for the trees." for the trees have no tongues.
The Washington Post reports that the judges concluded that the Forest Service had raised proper environmental questions early in its permit process, but those issues were suddenly and mysteriously assuaged in time to meet a private company's deadlines.
The court said that the agency's decisions violated both the National Forest Management Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, and found the Forest Service lacked the authority to grant the pipeline a right-of-way across the Appalachian Trail.
The underground natural gas pipeline is being built by Virginia-based Dominion Energy and would stretch over 600 miles across West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. A spokesperson for Dominion and its partners said they will immediately appeal the decision, saying it will severely harm consumers and do great damage to our economy and energy security.
Lawyers for the Southern Environmental Law Center, who brought the case, hailed it as a major victory. And if the Lorax could rise up from the pages, he might applaud it as well. Even though he wasn't able to save his fictional truffula trees, he helped the judges save a real forest instead.
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Explore new trends in technology at ACE 19, June 9th through 12th in Denver. Learn more at awwaace.org.